Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. An important issue today as it relates both to immigration and law enforcement locally is who we think of as belonging to a gang. That definition is not precise, and it really matters a lot to a lot of people's lives. Like at the federal level, the Trump administration uses a broad definition, repeatedly using rhetoric that conflates Latin American immigrants with drug dealers and gang members, and from there describing those ill-defined gangs as animals. You heard that from Trump recently. It also matters, though, to who they deport, who they consider part of MS-13. Is it really somebody who's plotting and committing gang violence? Is it a kid who gets caught up in that community because that's what he's got available to him? And is that enough for deportation? So those are the things at the federal level. And with all the focus on the North Korea summit yesterday, you may have missed that Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a ruling that gang violence, along with domestic abuse, is now considered an inadequate justification for asylum seekers trying to gain entry into the U.S. Sessions argued that gang violence constitutes a type of private violence in other countries and therefore does not fall under the asylum statute that provides refuge from government persecution. Now, while this isn't exactly a charge that the asylum seekers are themselves gang members, the message seems to be that they are not sufficiently victimized to warrant escape, and that gang violence is a private matter, not a public issue, at least in other countries. So another story you may have missed yesterday deals with the definition of gangs here in New York and how the government, the city, polices them. As reported yesterday by The Intercept, the NYPD's gang database has expanded by 70% under Mayor Bill de Blasio, with 342 people added per month on average. This despite historically low crime levels in the city. And based on information from a public records request by a CUNY law professor, The Intercept also reported that 99% of those added were non-white during the de Blasio years. Now, the database is part of the city's strategy of what they call precision policing. But according to civil rights and advocacy groups like the NAACP, Legal Defense and Education Fund, and the Legal Aid Society, the database is anything but precise. Now, tomorrow morning, this is going to become an issue in front of City Council when their Public Safety Committee holds an oversight hearing to consider the NYPD's gang takedown efforts, where the database's problems of alleged over-inclusivity, as well as secrecy and bias, will be scrutinized. So we're going to preview that hearing now with two guests, Anthony Posada, supervising attorney in the Legal Aid Society's Community Justice Unit, and Taylon Murphy, an anti-violence activist, consultant, and the founder of the Tayshana Chicken Murphy Foundation. Welcome both of you to WNYC. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Buenos dias, Brian. Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having us.
Anthony with Legal Aid here in our studio. For listeners not familiar, can you explain what the NYPD system of, quote, precision policing is and how that gang database works?
So I can take a start of that, Brian. And for folks not familiar with the NYPD gang policing regime, as the Intercept article is shedding light, it is a dehumanizing regime that relies on criteria that is absolutely vague and that lumps people in by guilty by association. There is an entry sheet that is used where there are boxes to be checked off at the bottom that say things such as if you live in a known gang location, if you wear certain colors, if you say hi to somebody who they believe to be in a gang. And notice that nowhere in those boxes is there a check that you have committed a crime or that you have a conviction in order for you to be labeled.
Let me bring the listeners along here. I'm getting a handout like we were in class. We're in Anthony Posada's Legal Aid gang position database class, and he gave me a form that he was just describing that the NYPD uses called an IDS. What is IDS?
Intelligence Division Sheet, we believe, is
okay.
The acronym.
So an IDS, Intelligence Division Gang Entry Sheet, and just as he was saying, criteria, and I guess it's telling who, a police officer on this sheet, that in order to identify somebody as a gang member, you have to be able to check one of these boxes?
Correct. This is a sheet used by the department itself, and so anybody in the department coming in contact or making an arrest will have access to this sheet to fill it out.
And there are six boxes in this category: known gang location, scars or tattoos associated with gangs, gang-related documents, colors associated with gangs, association with known gang members, or hand signs associated with gangs. Now, some of those sound like good admissible evidence in court, like gang-related documents, but then others, like you were indicating, are very vague. Known gang location? What if your block is a known gang location and you're just on your block? What does association mean, association with known gang members? If they're some of your neighbors and you're having a conversation, is that an association? And you could go down the list. So Talon, let me bring you into this. I read that the NYPD defines a gang as a group of persons with a formal or informal structure that includes designated leaders and members that engage in or are suspected to engage in unlawful conduct. Is that an acceptable definition to you?
I don't think that's an acceptable definition, because we have young people that are, we have communities that are, that have young people in it that have lack of resources. I mean, when you have a lack of resources, I mean, you have young people that group up, that don't have anywhere to go, that are on the corner. So, I mean, are they designated gang members because they have little resources in their community and they're just hanging out and they have nothing to do? I don't think it's fair to actually use these vague and broad definitions to define people that are in gang, that define people to be gang members.
And Talon, would you share with our listeners a little bit of you and your family's personal investment in this issue? Can you share your story a little bit?
Well, my story starts back in 2011 when my daughter, Tayshana Chicken Murphy, Chicken as we called her, affectionately called her, was killed due to an ongoing rivalry between two housing developments. And so after she was brutally murdered, chased into her building, brutally murdered on the fourth floor, it spiraled a chain of events. And in the article that we've wrote, the op-ed, I explained how, you know, it took us three years to go to trial. We went to trial, and this is the second trial in 3 years, to find out that there was a Viper Room officer that was looking at Viper cameras. The Viper cameras are cameras that actually surveil the community. And he testified that he seen the two individuals that actually ended up killing my daughter leave a building across the street with what appears to be a firearm. And when asked what did he do, I mean, there was a whole lot of clamor in the courtroom, of objection by the district attorney, and we never got clarity on what if anything that he did. And as we look at it, he did nothing, because those same young men were able to walk across the street, and 15 minutes later my daughter was shot down in a hallway, fourth floor hallway in her building.
But if your daughter died, if I'm understanding your story correctly, as a result of a gang rivalry in your neighborhood, one might think that you would want the NYPD to be very tough on gangs and take a relatively broad approach.
Well, I would like for the NYPD to actually, when they see something occurring, to actually intervene. Since my daughter's death, I've been a credible messenger, a violent interrupter. I go out into the communities and I identify different conflicts, and actually I go and strive to mediate them and bring the two conflicting parties together and come to some type of truce. Now, I don't expect the NYPD to do that type of intricate work, but what I do expect is for them not to watch young people over a span of three to four years go back and forth without doing anything, to intervene and watch them hurt one another.
My guests, if you're just joining us, are Talon Murphy, who is just speaking, an anti-violence activist, consultant, and founder of the Tayshaunna Chicken Murphy Foundation. Tayshaunna Chicken Murphy was his daughter, as he was just describing, and Anthony Posada, supervising attorney in the Legal Aid Society's Community Justice Unit. And Anthony, it sounds like, from hearing the two of you, that there are two issues here, almost opposite issues, with Talon describing how the police sometimes do nothing, and you at Legal Aid concerned about how they may do too much to kids who are not dangerous but are tagged as gang members or potential gang members by the police.
That is correct, Brian, and we actually refer to this situation in the op-ed as a schizophrenic situation where on one side gang raids and gang sweeps and takedowns are part of NYPD policy and supported by the city, but at the same time, there's an active belief and commitment to seeing a community-based alternative, such as the crisis management system, really connect with people on the ground to impact and make transformative change. And so I believe what we are really trying to say is the use of resources and the allocation of where they're going is misguided if we continue using dehumanizing practices that leave gaping racial disparities in their wake, which is very familiar territory for the NYPD when we talk about marijuana arrests. It is the Black and Latino community that is the easiest to get arrested for marijuana possession in New York City. When we talk about fare beating arrests, thanks to Fair Fares, shout out to that happening yesterday, but before that, it was essentially criminalizing poverty that was focused on the Black and Latino community. And so it's a very similar situation that we're dealing with right now where there's no accountability for how that is happening.
Both of you have mentioned your op-ed, and I should tell the listeners that the two of you wrote an article for City Limits in which, for example, you frame your criticism of the NYPD's gang database within Trump's comments about MS-13 being animals. So, Anthony, how do those two things actually connect?
Well, Brian, we have right here in New York where Trump and Sessions personally flew out to Long Island to declare war on MS-13 and specifically to say that they would be decimated. And after those comments are made, we see situations where youth who are going to high school in Long Island are not entering safe spaces that are nurturing their learning, but where teachers themselves must undergo a dehumanizing act to label their students as gang affiliated or gang involved. And that information is given to a school safety agent officer who passes that on. And next thing we know, ICE are showing up at the door of this young person's home to subject them to deportation. And so those are the animals that we're talking about, the same people who are contributing to New York, who are living productive lives, the same way it was okay for ICE to arrest a pizza delivery man just the other day, right? It's the whole notion and rhetoric that is being used on immigrant communities, which was no different than the rhetoric that stoked the fires to pursue the Central Park Five as savage, wilding youth who were out of control. And let's not forget that the prosecutors also contributed.
Vindicated when the DNA of the person who actually committed that crime showed up.
Exactly. And so let's not forget that the police do one part of the labeling, but the other part is taken by the prosecutors who make sure that this goes through.
But Talon, is there a contradiction here between what Anthony's been focusing on, over-aggressive policing in the Legal Aid Society's opinion, and what you were describing before, the police being bystanders too often when people like your daughter wind up the victims of gang rivalries and gang violence?
I really don't think that there is a contradiction. What I do think is that this phrase, precision policing, is actually far from being precise. I mean, like I said before, and I can't harp on it enough, if we're supposedly locating, identifying who is the people that are problems in the community and really dealing with them. I mean, when we identify them problems or we identify them individuals, shouldn't we intervene with some type of alternative other than doing a military-style raid and bringing in 400 police and traumatizing a community that's probably already traumatized by years and years of social and economical poverty? So I really don't think it's a contradiction. I just think that that we have to really define what this precision policing really is.
Let's take a phone call. Jim in the South Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in the Southeast Bronx, the Longwood area. I moved into this area in 1994, almost 25 years ago. And I want to call to speak up in favor of at least a certain degree of police activism in dealing with gang violence and drug violence. It's been endemic in this area for many years. There's been some successful police curtailment of it. When I first moved where I am now, there were three buildings that were taken over by a drug gang just right down the block from me. It's only when the police went in there full force and cleared it out that all the violence, all the negativity that came from that spot was finally reduced. And I really think someone needs to speak up for those of us who have to live with this every day. And, you know, no one speaks up for us who have to, you know, confront these people on the street on every day. And it's always about the excesses of the police and not about those who are committing the violence.
Taylon, want to talk to Jim?
Well, Jim, I mean, actually, there are people that are out here on the ground. There are credible messengers. There are violent interrupters. There are different CBOs, community-based organizations, that actually go into areas that you are describing and actually mm-hmm. try to transform the mindset of the individuals. We have a model that we have to identify what the issue is, mediate the issue, and then change the community norms. And in doing this, there is, like I said, and I don't like to sound like a broken record, a lack of resources to help us credible messengers, violent interrupters, and outreach workers do this task safely, comfortably, and also effectively. So, I mean, you know, I don't know where exactly you're at in the Bronx or if there is a CBO that's there.
I'm in the Longwood area, by the way, the Southeast Bronx, near Southern Boulevard.
Okay, but like I said, and I know exactly where the area is at. I don't know what CBO is there, community-based organization, or Cure Violence site, crisis management site. I don't know who's there. But I actually know that there are people that are on the ground every day trying to clean up their neighborhood, clean up the backyards, and they're ordinary people. We don't wear bulletproof vests. We don't have guns. We just go in as credible messengers, people that have dealt with some strife and some struggles in their lives, and they try to reach young people where they're at and try to transform their minds, hearts, and souls to think a little different and be more community-based.
Jim, thank you for your call. We're almost out of time. Anthony, this form that you handed me, the NYPD's gang entry sheet, which had some vague categories on it that can get people labeled as gang members or gang involved, what are the consequences of being labeled gang involved if you don't actually commit a crime? And then tell me what it is you want from tomorrow's city council hearing on this topic, and then we're out of time.
So, Brian, to start off, the consequences are severe and they're life-altering. If you are not charged with the crime, and let's say I am immigrant, I can be subjected to ICE arresting me and facing deportation. And so in that regard, we know that the consequences are not light. In the consequences of having, let's say, a low-level contact that doesn't even result in an arrest, but let's say a summons was given, or let's say that if an arrest was given, I received what is called an adjournment in contemplation of dismissal, and the case is dismissed, right? That information will remain there, and it will linger, because at the moment, there is no purging of the database. There is no constitutional protections that would allow me to know if I am on it. I would not get any notice, and I would not get any opportunity to challenge that inclusion into the database. So
there could be kids in the neighborhood who are on the NYPD's gang-involved database without ever having committed a crime or even knowing that they're in it.
Absolutely. Right now, that's the position we're in, Brian, and we're hoping tomorrow to get answers to these questions, to demand and to have the City Council Public Safety Chair, Council Member Donovan Richards, ask the questions that we have been wanting to know for a very long time about how is it that this operation comes together and why is it that we are facing such racial disparities with the way in which it is being handled.
Anthony Posada is supervising attorney in the Legal Aid Society's Community Justice Unit, and Talon Murphy is an anti-violence activist and founder of the Tayshauna Chicken Murphy Foundation. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.